how legislation shouldn't happen, when the people can't trust anybody, apathy, and high school reunions. I'm Justin Katz for Last Impressions 22. So how do you know when somebody's extremely busy? Well, in my case, it might just be when I have to do intro music with an African drum my mom got me some years ago for some reason. No rhyme or reason. I just thought it was a neat NPR-ish way of easing into this this particular Last Impressions episode. So for the beginning, for my rant, everybody's talking about how the General Assembly fell apart at the end of the year with the budget and things just didn't seem to go as they were supposed to go, which a lot of us, especially on the conservative end, are saying, yay, do more of this. Let things fall apart all the time. Don't even go. Take a couple years off, you know? Just resolve your problems and do some group bonding sessions and then go back in a few years and maybe we'll get things right in that way. But in light of that, it makes a lot of people maybe not, pay attention to the process a little bit more. And to that end, Representative Jared Nunes, he's a Democrat, but probably he scores at the top of the Freedom Index for Democrats regularly for the Rhode Island Center for Freedom and Prosperity, and he puts in some good legislation and is often a voice of reason. So he's a Democrat from Coventry in West Warwick, and he was on Matt Allen's show recently, and he was describing how, especially toward the end of the legislative session, how the committee hearings work. And this is one of those things, it's really astonishing. So even if you've heard it, you should listen to it again, maybe a few times, but let me play it for you just once. I've actually taken two clips from that talk with Matt Allen and put them together.
I didn't even know that I was going to have a committee hearing tonight until recently, and I didn't know it was posted until I got an email about an hour ago from the Speaker's office saying, these are the bills you're going to be voting on. Please show up promptly.
So I guess there's been some tweaks to it, and then they're going to, what, have another hearing on it, on the tweaks today?
Yeah, but I can't see the language, the sub A language, until I get to committee. I can't even review it beforehand.
So you have no idea what this bill is going to say, but you're going to have an opinion, an educated opinion for your constituents, and vote on it within, like, what, 5-10 minutes when you get to the State House today?
So it almost doesn't even matter what the bill is that they're talking about. Here's a legislator who's on a committee. They've reviewed a bill and it's gone away into the held for further study ether. And now he's going to have to, he gets a call all of a sudden, hey, show up at this time. Here's what you're going to be voting on. Oh, and it might change. And we'll tell you how it changed when you get here, right before you have to vote. And sometimes they just take out all the language and put in all new language. So it's not even like you're just checking that they moved this word over here. I mean, it could be an entirely new bill, and yet there's no notice. And it just goes to show there's no pretense here that they're doing a job, right? The people in the committees know how they're supposed to vote, no matter what the legislation says. And so it doesn't really matter if they can read the legislation. It's just astonishing. But one of the things also Representative Nunes referred to, and I went back and I checked it, another representative, Robert Jacquard, who's a Democrat from Cranston, not as good on the Freedom Index as Representative Nunes, and not a particularly positive legislator in my own opinion, but he's for a number of years he's been pushing this idea of using cameras to take pictures of people's license plates and automatically charge them a fine if they don't have driver's insurance or auto insurance, and it's never gone through. It always gets held up because nobody supports it. But this year, it looked, until the budget fell apart, it looked like it was going to go through, perhaps because the speaker needed everybody's votes because he had made such a big promise on the getting rid of the car tax. So Representative Nunes referred to Jacquard on the floor of the House when he's putting forward this bill to be voted on, and it passed, by the way, so you know the ending here, 48-17. I mean, not even close. So he gets up and, according to Nunes, says, hey, nobody supports this bill. And it wasn't quite that, but it's pretty close. Here's how Jacquard actually put it on the floor of the House for this bill.
The bill was opposed by the casualty insurers and the ACLU, and the Department of Motor Vehicles and the Department of Public Safety have written letters expressing concerns.
Not once does Jacquard say somebody showed up for the hearing and supports it, or argued why there's some outcry, why it needs to be done. It's just, as far as we can tell, it's just something he wants to get done. So I actually went back to the committee hearing in February, I think February 28th. He's the chairman of the House Corporations Committee. So that's where they heard this particular bill in February, at the end of February, and nobody testified in favor of it. Nobody. This is Representative Jacquard's bill. He's given no indication of why, who supports it, where it's coming from. And yet he gets on the floor and he reads this statement. It sounded to me like it was a prepared statement, not by him, because he didn't seem all that familiar with what he was about to read. So nobody supports it. Not a single proponent, not a single person went to the hearing and said, yes, we need this in your state. And other red flags, while we're talking about process, in that House Corporations hearing, unfortunately, it's only audio, because they don't videotape every hearing and every committee, and it's difficult to skim through audio, more difficult than video, obviously. You can't see any labels or who's talking. And that's one of the reasons I'm running so behind today, because I had to go through this 2.5-hour meeting. Now, Jacquard's bill was scheduled to be in the middle of the hearing. That's when it was on the itinerary. It was item, you know, whatever, 6 out of 12. He held it to the very end of this 2.5-hour meeting, which is a big signal. I would rather you get bored and go home and decide it's not worth your time to stay here. But this is legislation. So this guy, I've done some digging and I can't find any evidence that there's some incentive for the representative to be pushing this bill so hard. There's a red flag, obviously, that what happens here is the vendor, the state would go out and find the vendor to set up the system and operate the system. So the vendor will, I think it's a 50-50 split. The vendor gets half of every fee, $120 fee every time somebody stops, and the state gets the other half. It's crazy. So he's got this bill he wants passed. It goes every year. He brings it back. There's no apparent constituency for it. There's nobody who comes and testifies for it. He doesn't even have it's not good for people to not have insurance. Oh, and there's revenue too. But he doesn't have anything in particular why this is such a concern to him, and holds the bill to the end of the hearing, which is only audio recorded in the first place, and then brings it up on the floor, boom, 48-17. And but for the confusion at the end of the session, we'd now probably very shortly have a system of video cameras set up across the state taking pictures of everybody's license plates in order to scan for the handful of out-of-state people who might not have auto insurance. Something just doesn't add up there. But the biggest thing that doesn't add up there is that this is how legislation happens in Rhode Island. And who can trust that? Now, speaking of trust, another thing that caught my eye now that I finally finished building a shed in my yard, which was one thing that was eating up a lot of my time, and there's a campaign going on Tiverton that I'm helping with, and other stuff as well, ended a legislative session. So I'm finally kind of catching my breath a little and getting back to just my routine of reading things and listening to podcasts. And one of the podcasts I'm listening to, and I listened to the first season from start to finish, is Malcolm Gladwell's Revisionist History podcast. And I'll have the link to on the post associated with this audit podcast. So he's in season number 2. And in the second episode, he's talking, just something in a book caught his eye related to the CIA and the way it operates with assets and informants. So he doesn't necessarily have a strong argument in this particular episode, but he's presenting something that he found interesting, and he wanted to chase it down. And that's the whole series is called Revisionist History, because it's something that might be kind of overlooked. He wants to just take a closer look at. And there's one line in this podcast that really, really caught my ear, because it's very important, and it should, to me, if I were writing a Revisionist History podcast, this is one that I would dig into. So he's talking about, the story is generally there's this terrorist guy who approached the CIA and said, basically, I'm remorseful for all that I've done and I want to help you. And he did. He helped the CIA in a big way, particularly catching the infamous Jackal terrorist. And so he does that. But he, in the past, had set off bombs or something that hurt Americans. And that was supposed to be a red flag for the CIA in bringing him on as an informant. And the CIA didn't follow its bureaucratic processes. And so leaks went to a New York Times reporter who put the story on the front page with a little bit of adjustment to protect some bit of intelligence, I guess, but not enough, because lo and behold, this guy ends up dead. So Gladwell's point is that, you know, maybe even if nobody's doing anything that's ultimately wrong, shouldn't we, this guy have some forgiveness for what he did? And shouldn't the reporters have kind of paused to say, wow, we just got somebody killed? But this is the point that really could bear more fleshing out on Gladwell's part, but on all of our parts. Here it is.
Why do we put up with a hugely powerful agency like the CIA, with a budget in the tens of billions, doing things we know very little about? Because we're confident that if the CIA does something truly evil or stupid, the press will find out and let us know.
Whoa. I mean, if you're at all like-minded to me, the first thing you'll think of is, well, boy, what do we do now? I mean, the way the media has been acting, the way the intelligence services have been acting, we can't trust either side in this equation. That's scary. I mean, the idea here is the CIA does stuff, and they, by their nature, they have to be secretive, and by its nature, government has to have certain powers. And one of the things that makes a free press so critical is that, and also I would add in, to at least having two parties that are constantly battling, and everybody has some incentive to smoke the other side out, whether you're talking Republicans versus Democrats or the CIA versus news media. But what happens when they're not all counter cross purposes? They're actually starting to side with each other. So if the CIA is doing stuff, whether it's explicitly, deliberately partisan, or just happens to be the way things are aligning right now, but when the CIA is doing things that target a particular administration from a particular party, and the news media is also doing things to target that same politician and the same party, and they're all working in the same direction against an elected official elected by the people, that's kind of where we are right now with President Trump. And it's frightening. And I wish folks like Gladwell, who's, you know, he's a mainstreamer, a MSM, you know, mainstream media. His podcasts are often have that kind of progressive tinge, although he's an intellectual enough that he wants to be fair to some degree. If only that light bulb would go off, like just as he was reading this book, and this one scene, one page in the whole book jumped out at him, maybe it'd be nice if this, that particular phrase of his own would jump out at him, and he would ask, well, what about when many Americans feel like they can't trust either side in that equation? And then the next question is, who is watching out for that? Right now, what we're setting up is where a lot of people don't feel like they can trust anybody except an erratic egomaniac like Donald Trump. That's dangerous. You don't want to set that up where all of the planners and all of the intricate bureaucracies and institutions in the country are all focused against a particular a majority, perhaps, probably, of the country, and the only person, the only entity that's really standing up is a single person, a single personality, and the party that with which she's associated. That's not good either, and we kind of need everybody to get back into this routine of accepting the boundaries, and that includes the CIA, and it includes the New York Times especially, and news media generally. So switching topics more, I guess, philosophically, I didn't jot down a whole lot of, it's not a carefully laid out argument I'm about to enter into, but I've been thinking about apathy, because that's something people complain about a lot in Rhode Island. I've certainly done a bunch of complaining about it. Locally in Tiverton, I've watched some new candidates that I'm not necessarily aligned with, but they're new to the game, and they're probably starting to feel this sense of apathy. And even though I hope they don't win the election coming up in Tiverton on July 18th, I hope they don't give up and go away and just say, well, we can't do anything. I've always sort of taken the view that apathy, road apathy, as Dan York calls it, or used to call it, but apathy, it's something those of us who are deeply involved and informed, are very concerned with, because people aren't doing anything. But I'm starting to kind of get another perspective on it. I mean, what is apathy ultimately? First, to some degree, it's because people feel like they can't get anything accomplished, in large part because the system's so rigged against them, whether it's because of the bad legislative process in Rhode Island or the media and CIA showing that we can't trust either of them. And what are you going to do if you're not in agreement with them? And then you can't get anything done. So you just block it out, I would think, and I'm going to live my life and set up my walls. But another way of looking at it, and perhaps a positive spin on apathy, if that's possible, is that people want to be left alone to live their lives. So it's almost something very, very much related between political apathy and the sort of conservatism that I espouse. The problem is, that's what is small government, right? Except a sort of, I don't want to have to pay attention to you people. I want you to leave me alone. You know, I'll pay attention for enough to make sure you're picking up my trash or taking out the garbage or that the police come. I'll pay enough attention for that. But when you're so intricately involved in everything, I don't want, to shrink that down. That's a color of a tinge of apathy. Unfortunately, what's happened is a sizable enough minority has figured out that it can turn leave me alone from a sort of general philosophy of government into a reason for people to give in. So leave me alone. I shrink government down. I don't want to just let me do my thing. But you can easily make that into, here, I'm going to use the freedoms we have in this country in the democratic process that we have, and I'm going to keep pestering you and poking you until leave me alone means I get what I want. So it's like a pestering toddler or a younger sibling or young child. You know, oh, can I have a snack? No, I'm busy. Stop. I want a snack. No, I'm trying to get this done. Please, I'm just a few. Just give me five. I want a snack. No. Okay, you get your snack. And that. So the snack is how you buy being left alone to do your thing, whatever it is you're concentrating on. Of course, unlike your children, people can just leave a state when they want to be left alone. And we've certainly seen evidence of that in Rhode Island. And that's not a healthy thing. And ultimately you would hope at some point people would go, you know what, that's enough. You know, like with your kids, you say, all right, that's it. You go sit down. You're being too much trouble right now. Or you step aside for 5 minutes to sort of not hold them down, but, you know, focus them and get them in another place that they're not pestering you. And then you can go back with a deeper level of protection for doing what you want to do. And you would think people would ultimately wake up to that in the political realm and say, you know what, I'm not falling for this enough. You've gotten enough concessions from me and you still didn't go away. I mean, at some point it's got to dawn on people that the activists are insatiable and will ruin everything eventually. But the problem is in Rhode Island, especially a small state, they just will get up and leave and go somewhere else. And that way they don't have to get to that point. That's the point. They don't get to the point of aggravation where they fix things. They get to the point of aggravation that they leave. And that leaves two people, three. That leaves the the people who are getting something out of the system, the people who just have a whole very high tolerance for the pestering, and the people, I would say, like me, who are more, they see it more like a missionary activity. We're here in Rhode Island to fix things. But I would say, and I would encourage us all toward enough of a missionary attitude in that respect, to see our task is intervening to give people a way to be left alone that doesn't involve extortion. And by that I mean we need to structure our government in a way that people can, without too much effort, enforce their preference for the government to leave them alone. Because I think it's a much greater preference than most of us realize. But being left alone, being forced to do things by government, isn't the only way to be pestered, and to the point that it doesn't become pestering. I mean, if you've got a conscience, knowing that there are starving people down the street is going to intervene on your serenity, right? I mean, you're not going to be left alone. The knowledge of their existence is not going to leave you alone, and that's good. That's healthy. And trying to get rid of them is not healthy, whether it's just literally trying to get rid of them or trying to shut them out of your conscience and your awareness. That's not healthy. But government oughtn't to be a way also to just say, here, you know what? I can make those people go away, tax all of my neighbors, and give those people money and get them out of here. That's not healthy either. So what we need to do is figure out a way for people to allocate their time and make their own decisions about what deserves their attention. And in doing that, I mean, that comes down right to small government and democratic processes that function. I don't see any other way, because there's no end. Well, first of all, there's no end to suffering. I mean, even Jesus said, the poor will be always with you. That's going to happen till the end days. we're promised that much, right? And the people who want things are always going to want more. And there will always be new people who say, well, if that guy's getting that privilege, why don't I pull the same trick and get my own privilege? There's not, human nature is such that we're never going to come to a natural plateau of, okay, now we all have enough. It's just not likely, particularly in a very diverse society with people with different priorities. So last night, actually, I was thinking this already along these terms, but last night I got a notice that next year, 2018, will be my 25th high school reunion, which, I mean, how did that happen? First of all, of course, anybody of a certain age will have that reaction. But what's funny, and I've noticed this partly just being on Facebook, which I use Facebook just to, more as a promotional vehicle than anything. It's not very good for getting information. Twitter's much better with that. And it's almost too big and formal for the one-off sentences that just seems too light, which is, Twitter's also good for scratching that itch. I use Facebook mainly to promote what I'm doing. Every now and then, though, somebody I'm friends with, because they're from my life and not my work or whatever, will respond to something. And it gets you thinking. It's funny communicating with people you grew up with. I mean, even after 20 something years, there's still this sort of connection. It's weird. I mean, these are people I haven't seen in decades, and probably may never see again, whether or not I go to the reunion, and have no effect on my life in any real way. I mean, I suppose if they had some dirt on me or something, or on, you know, if somebody from high school has dirt on you and you become somewhat of a public figure, then, especially with social media, this is a danger, I guess. They could dredge up your past like that, but that's not really quite the feeling I'm getting at. I was thinking about it the other day. It seems like, in some regards, it's like checking in with people you last saw, you know, all before you leapt into adult life from your childhood. It's almost like a time warping thing where you can all go back to that moment, you know, graduation or whatever that moment may have been, where you all kind of were saying, okay, well, this is, we're now at the next stage and we're all going off and saying, well, so how'd you make out? Let's check back in. In some regards, it almost makes their judgment more profound to you or to me, because these are people who are judging you against your trajectory when they last saw you years and years and years ago. I'm not sure what to make of that. I mean, I'm sure it's not much something to be concerned about or to really modify your behavior over. But it's interesting. I think I wonder what I haven't seen a whole lot of commentary about how social media and the internet have kind of changed that. Partly because you can just check in on people as you go. But it's kind of an interesting idea and a way to end on a softer note than ranting about legislation and not trusting the CIA. And on that note, maybe next year, not next week, we'll have some resolution to the budget mysteries and maybe we'll actually have gotten into summer and everybody will be in that mode, because we need it.